Keith. Thanks for the awesome invitation and welcome and introduction. You will hear that I helped the team win yesterday. Thank you very much. It's been a long morning already. I mean, the amount of information that you've had, you're going to be really glad that I'm a camp director first and a retreat director second, because I brought props. So you'll be able to follow after you're just about having heard enough. I just want to take a brief moment, though, just to give you a slight introduction to King's Fold, only in the sense that a lot of people say, I've heard of that place, or I've heard great things about that place. And both of those are good things, but we'd actually like to invite you to come to this place. Nancy and I will be at the back table. There's a video screen that'll show you some images of King's Fold. And it's interesting, I brought up this piece of the bulletin because it said authentic living. I love the fact that you have a 6-week course on authentic living. And I think that during the time you might be in that course, you may be looking for what Jason and Mike are looking for. They actually come on a regular basis for their personal prayer retreats so that they can be renewed and refreshed and restored. And we just want to encourage you to be part of that as well. If you say, I'm not really sure about this whole retreating thing, you can actually just come for a day. Come at 9 in the morning, have lunch with us, go home at 4 or 5, whatever time you can give to it. And it's just an opportunity. It's kind of funny. The songs like, You're a Good, Good Father. You can just imagine if you were able to just come towards God on that day and say, You're a good, good father. That's who you are. And I'm loved by you. That's who I am. It's just a beautiful experience to actually enter into relationship with God that's not led by a Bible or a pastor or a book, but that's just led in terms of a face-to-face time that you can spend with God. So we just really encourage you to consider that for yourselves. And that's all I'm going to say about King's Fold because it's been long enough. So for a message this morning, I have a unique sort of thing. I'm getting a ton of ring up here. I don't know if you're getting it out there, but maybe it's the monitors. We're good? All right. I'm speaking this morning on a passage from Romans 12. And the minute that you start to preach on a well-known passage, it's hard for people to kind of go, oh, I've already heard this one, so they kind of let it go by. But in order to make it a little bit easier for you to understand the point that I'm trying to make, I'm going to open up my suitcase, and I'm going to try to unpack some truth for you this morning. You see what I just did there? Some of you are quicker than others. So we're going to be reading from Romans 12, and put the passage up there. We're actually going to leave the passage up the entire message, because if anything that I'm saying doesn't agree with that, then you go back to the scriptures, right? Just keep focusing on that. But one of the things I want you to know is that it's a really strange time for us, because the last Sunday of August is kind of like New Year's Eve preaching. Because for a lot of us, the year to come is more of a school year or a work year. So that a lot of times we actually begin to evaluate ourselves in light of, okay, so what am I going to do in the year ahead? Quite often by the time we're in December switching into January, our lives are really well established, so we don't really have a lot of decision making we do. But I want to encourage you this morning to be thinking consciously about the year ahead. So in a way, it's a little bit like a New Year's Eve service with that kind of a feel, so that you can feel like, how do I want to respond starting September 1st and for the year ahead in response to what I'm learning from God this morning? So if we see the first word, and so, in some versions of the Bible it says, therefore, right? Kind of the same idea. And anytime something says, and so, or therefore, you kind of want to know the context of, okay, so what preceded it, so that we're having a chance to understand fully what it is that we're learning. I'm just going to give you a little bit of the preceding verses, basically saying how great are God's riches and wisdom and knowledge, and how impossible it is for us to understand him and his methods. For who can know what the Lord is thinking? Who knows enough to be his counselor? And this is the part I love. Who could ever give him so much that God would have to pay us back? If you think of that, which one of us could give God so that we have a credit on the books? None of us could. It says, and so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God. Because of all he's done for you, let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind he'll find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you'll learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. Offering your body as a living sacrifice, it's kind of a really thing. When it was written in the day that it was written, it's an unusual thought, because within the Jewish culture, there's a well-established understanding of what sacrifice is. Sacrifice is bringing a goat, a sheep, a dove, which must give its life in order for your sacrifice to be forgiven. And all of us can understand that through Jesus Christ, that one sacrifice has been paid for our sins. His death has been the sacrifice for our sins. So how do we offer our bodies as a living sacrifice? What does that actually look like? How do you live as a living sacrifice? Well, if you were to think of offering your body, what kind of posture would you have in your hands? Like this. I'm going to offer my body as a living sacrifice. And all of us have kind of got this opportunity this morning to learn about how it is that we offer our bodies as a living sacrifice by beginning with the understanding that as newborn babies, we come into the world naked, without possessions, without friendships, without really family for that sense, except the ones that have borne us. And when we leave at the end of our lives, we leave naked, without possessions, without families, because there's a very simple beginning and a very simple ending. But in the middle, our life gets really, really complicated. So I'm going to unpack some things to help you understand how our lives get complicated. When I was 1 day old, I got my first possession. 56 years ago in January, I wore this home from the hospital. It's my snowsuit. And it's a possession that's sort of a symbol of all of our possessions, but it sort of begins the story that in our simple life, it doesn't take long for things to get complicated. So I began to have possessions. As a child, I got a piggy bank, and as an adult, I have a wallet. So those possessions include money. Now, our interrelationship with money is incredibly complex, and it really does complicate our lives. They're not as simple as they once were. Now, if you're a young person in the audience, you will know that a cell phone equals friendship. You have a lot of your friendship connections through a cell phone, and in the case of all of us, it's a place that we use to connect with people. So we have our lovely possessions, and then our belongings, and then our friendships that all began to sort of be added to the simplicity of our life. Now, if we're really fortunate and one of those friendships ends up leading to a marriage, and maybe that marriage ends up to being family, then you get an even greater complication. Now, this is my first family. Pastor Mike mentioned that my first wife passed in 2009, but this was when we were running Camp Chestermere. We had four biological daughters, and then we have two foster daughters. But my first wife, Jackie, passed away, and one of my daughters, Angel, is also dead. She passed away in a car accident. So this is, in a way, just a symbol or an icon of what comes into our lives, but it's also a chance for you to know my story a little, because it's an important part of our lives. For some of us, we long for family, or we have terrible relationships with family, but family is one of the things that comes into our life that makes things a little bit more complex. Now, not many people would use a hoodie as an example of a work icon, but we're often, we have a chance to work. This is my Camp Chestermere hoodie, where I served for 17 years, and it was a job that actually I gave up because I felt God was calling me to. But sometimes we get jobs that we are not expecting, and sometimes jobs are taken from us that we're not expecting. And both of those have happened in my life, because I was a commissioned salesman working at Eaton's department stores selling TVs and stereos, and a board of Camp Chestermere says, will you be our next director? It was ridiculous. But also, after Chestermere, when I moved to Ontario, I had a role there at a summer camp where the board said, please stop being our director. And amazing what that does to your sense of worth, right? Because you feel like you've got all of your life together, and then something comes along where you're not wanted anymore. So work is an incredible complication in terms of how much time it takes, but also how we feel about it. Now, if you're fortunate to be like me, you have hobbies. Somehow these hobbies have to fit into your life, and I really hope the golf balls don't fall off as I'm doing this, because I like having golf in my life, but it's a complication because it's part of the things that I have to weigh against my money, my family, my work, and all my other time. It's a complication that I like, but it is a complication. Now, for a lot of you, you're not going to like the next symbol. So it can symbolize your Netflix, your TV watching, or anything else. The kinds of things you do in your downtime. I just need to say that there's two kinds of downtime you can have. There's vacation, and there's holiday. Just for the sake of two words. Vacation means vacant from. And a lot of us know what that looks like. Holiday means holy day. And that's taking time aside that's actually something that renews and restores our souls and our beings. So that's one of those things that you have to consider. Your free time is one of the things that complicates this life that you have to make choices about. Now, I am a Stampeders fan, but a lot of people are Flames fans. So when you start to look at your leisure activities, they also take time from your family, your money, your work time and everything else. And you have to kind of figure out how does this leisure activity or recreation fit in terms of the rest of my life, which is getting very heavy all of a sudden. If you're fortunate to develop some investments, that's what this little flyer stands for, sometimes they become a source of security for us, or they become an obsession for us, where we'll get up in the morning and find out how our mutual funds are doing. Our investments are a really complicating factor, because sometimes we have to wonder about how much hope or trust we place in our investments versus how much we do in our trust in God. Now, we get the Bible. That gets added to everything else because we have to find time for God in lieu of everything else. This is getting really heavy. And, oops, also very tippy. So that how in the world do I fit Bible reading in on top of Flames games and Netflix and time with my family and time at work and everything else? And then when we open the Word of God up and it says, offer your body as a living and holy sacrifice, you're kind of going, well, what does that mean? And then you come to church. It's terrible. The bulletin's full of opportunities to serve at church. And you guys didn't get off easy this morning. I mean, Sunday school teachers go on a missions trip to the Far East or whatever. Like, there are so many opportunities that you have to say, if I'm to offer my body as a living sacrifice, that actually means my volunteerism. So how do I choose to volunteer on top of reading the Bible, on top of going to Flames games, on top of golfing, on top of my money and everything else? So the complications, you'd think, okay, what's Frank saying this morning? Do I just put them all away? Do I liquidate my assets? Do I choose to be childless for the sake of the gospel? Do I not ever golf because that takes money away from the Lord? Like, what's a right response to all of these complications in our life when we truly offer our bodies as a living sacrifice? I think what I want to make sure that you understand is that none of the things I've put here are bad. Actually, the economy thrives because of them, and it would be good for us to be part of the world. But I think the thing I'm looking for is that if you can imagine the very beginning when I said, what position does your life take when you offer your body? And that's two open palms. Does God actually still have access to everything in your life? Or are they things that are now not? They're actually holding you back. So when you consider volunteering at church or in other ministries, have you actually held that idea before God and said, Lord, would you have me do this? When we were here 5 or 6 weeks ago, and there was the description of what happened during the summer camp programs here, all your day camps, I just looked at the number of volunteers involved in that, and I was wondering if there were some school teachers there who said, Lord, I've been teaching all year, but I'm willing to teach because you've given me this gift. And I just really applaud and honor those that say, I'm willing to give beyond. But when you get an invitation to teach Sunday school on a church Sunday like this, do you just kind of go, I don't do that. I don't teach Sunday school because I never have. Well, have you actually offered that opportunity to God and said, Lord, would you have me teach Sunday school? Or would you have me serve on a church board? Or would you have me be part of the prayer team that meets before the service? We sometimes just think we know what we do. And I want to invite you to offer again the commitments that you make to this. I want you to offer to God some time with him each morning or at some point during the day to keep yourself open to what he has to teach you each day. I want you to ask God, what is the right amount of recreation? What is the right amount of TV viewing in my life or computer use? How much should I golf? Or are any of these things actually beginning to get in the way of me honoring God and offering my body as a living sacrifice? Some of you might say, please go faster, because I don't really want you to linger there at all. But even the things that I've mentioned are only symbols or aspects of our life that are all part of this question. Are we actually offering our bodies as living sacrifices? How about our work? Do we just do work because it's always been there? Or have we actually asked the Lord, is there other work that you have for me? Or if we're praying for a job, looking for a particular thing, are we actually saying, Lord, I'm here and available. I had the worst year of my life in Parry Sound, Ontario. I had been fired by the bishop of the entire denomination of the camp that I was running there. It was a horrible experience because it was followed by 14 months of unemployment. And I was just kind of saying to God, don't you know how good I am? Like, don't you think I've got something to offer you right now? Like, why am I being removed from a place? Like, aren't we friends anymore? Can I work for you anymore? And I had to spend 14 months with him in quiet, learning that he would actually be enough. And for some of us, that would be the most terrifying experience for me, even to this day, the worst days of my life. I lost my first wife to cancer. Two of my daughters actually have had cancer diagnoses as well. But the worst experience was being unemployed, because it was my worth. It was who I was. And it was so important for God to kind of take and form that. And all the way through the time that I was unemployed, I kept saying, Lord, I trust you, but I am grumpy. And I'm trusting you, but Lord, this is not a good experience for me. And actually, two friends from Alberta emailed me the job description for the Kingsfold position. And the first time I got it, I says, well, that's great, except I don't actually qualify for the job, so I better not take it or not even apply. And then it was sent again a couple of weeks later by somebody else saying, the Lord would not give me peace until I sent you this job posting. And I said, all right, Lord, I guess I'll apply. But it's been the most beautiful experience of me in leadership and in life to be working and living with people in community, serving others with the gift of hospitality. It's just what happened for me when I actually offered my job as a living sacrifice to God. I showed you this picture, and this picture isn't complete because right now in my life I have a wife, Nancy, and then two awesome kids, Laura and Michael, that have joined this picture. And for me, it's been such a joy to have a son for the first time in my life. We were in Jasper last weekend. We went adventuring, he and I, doing adventuring kinds of things. And it was such a joy. It's a gift to me. And I think that when you might look at this picture, some of you might say, I hope I have a husband one day, or I hope I have a wife, or I trust the Lord will give us children. I think even this picture, this ideal of what family looks like, is something we need to sacrifice and offer to God. God is a family for me, or our children for me. Lord, I trust you in that. Because when I was widowed, I had to say to the Lord, if you will allow it and give me the strength, I'll serve you as a widower. He didn't make me that way, but I wanted him to know I was in if he was in. So I think we have to sometimes consider our ideals about a family. Because in this picture, we're all smiling. But that family is full of mental illness. It's full of relational challenges. It always looks better from outside than inside. And I just want to ask you to consider and hold your family in front of God and say, Lord, what is the time that I spend with them? Your money. There's a real opportunity for you to think about here. I don't know how many of you have seen the lady that was standing in the Walmart parking lot day after day with my husband died, and then continuing on. She was looking for help. How many of you drove by with your wallets in your pocket? How many of you actually offered your wallet to God and say, Lord, what would you have me give this lady? I want you to actually consider that. The next time you're behind somebody in a grocery store and you see them pulling necessary items off the belt because they can't afford everything that's there. Why is that wallet not available for God to use to bless the lives of others? Do some of you need to be holding your wallet or your purse in an open palm? Your possessions. New year, new school year, new clothing, right? Well, this one still works after 56 years. I think that a lot of times we follow it's such an amazing thing. It says, don't copy the behavior and customs of the world. What is it in your clothing that you're doing that just follows the behavior and customs of the world? And to what degree are you actually saying, Lord, in the matter of my clothing, I offer it to you as well. To say, if I have 20 hangers in my closet, I never need to buy another hanger. Because if I buy an item, another item is being donated, right? Or I just might say, what I have is enough, and trust that that's true. What about your friendships? Do you know which ones are godly and which ones are ones that are keeping you from him? Because there's a five-person rule that exists, and it says that you become the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And I actually want to kind of, if you're sitting next to someone in the audience between 7 and 13, just give them the elbow right now, because I'm going to say it again. You become the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Perhaps you need to be offering your friendships to God so that you might be surrounded with people who you'd want to become the average of, ones that are godly and God-honoring, that are pure in speech, pure in heart, pure in motives. It's a really important thing that you decide how you do choose to spend your time. I know it would be really easy just to wake up and say, okay, just quit turning on your cell phone, quick check it at the table. That's all part of this whole thing. How much time do we spend with our family and our work and our hobbies? How much time do we spend on Facebook? This is an important thing to wonder. Are you actually willing today to begin offering your cell phone as a living sacrifice? Well, we've come to the end of the message, and I'm going to invite the band to come up as I conclude. Because the end of the message looks like, well, that was simple. Thanks for that information, Frank. But I want to actually ask you to do something that I was here probably 8 or 9 weeks ago when we had a guest pastor from Ambrose University. And I loved how he ended the message, and I will always do this from here on in. I want you to actually take a moment in silence and ask yourself two questions. The first one is, what is God saying to me today? So just ponder that question. Close your eyes or leave them open and just ask yourself the question, what is God saying to me today? The second follow the question that must follow it is this question. What am I going to do about it? When you think about what God's asking you to do today, what are you going to do about it? I'm going to invite you in a moment to stand and sing a song that is actually knit into the fabric of this message. It's not an afterthought. It is the conclusion of the message. Now, the reason it's a conclusion of the message is because as a trained Sunday school teacher and camp director, I understand that people remember 10% of what they hear, 30% of what they see, but 70% of what they do. So I want in a moment for you to stand up, and as we sing a song, Jesus, all for Jesus, all I am and have and ever hope to be, I surrender these into your hands. And if you are able to enter into that song with your soul and not just with your mind or your mouth, I actually want you to take the posture of what you would do if you were offering your body as a living sacrifice, is that you actually imagine holding all these things, your possessions, your family, your time, your hobbies, and say, Lord, I'm actually willing to surrender these into your hands. Because I want you to understand something, that as you open your palms to offer God your whole lives, imagine maybe for the first time that they're also open to receive everything he has for you. So I invite you to stand at this time.